Okay, so I just threw my couch through the window.
You should
have. I'm ready to start the show now. After that rocking intro. How to A to C the news and what's going on with the FBI raid of Mar-a-Lago. What's really going on? You're watching the Propaganda Report Strive Time at News Blast. I'm Brad Binkley. Joining me today to help out is the host of the Mad Ones podcast, Cam Harless. Cam, how you doing?
Doing all right. I found a Simply Spiked lemonade at the gas station just before this, and it's mostly gone. So I'm feeling.
Was that like a? What were those lemonades that was it have, I used to have in college? I remember I had like a 24.
Mike's Hard.
Mike's Hard, and I got caught with them, and you know I had to go buy some malt liquor instead because it got taken away from me. But Mike's Hard and Zima. I remember when I was like a kid, Zima was a thing. Which Zima seemed kind of. I don't know if it tasted good. Alcohol, the first few times you taste it, doesn't really take, but it does eventually. That is one thing.
Eventually, yeah.
That is for sure. And I'm sure there's a lot of people drinking alcohol tonight after the news that we have seen about Mar-a-Lago. So, look, the details of this story, the FBI raided Mar-a-Lago for documents, for possibly declassified documents, and maybe the destruction of presidential evidence. I'm sure maybe they confiscated all the toilets there. I don't know. I'm sure Adam Schiff wanted to get his hands and face on those toilets. I know I think he collects toilets. He's a sick, disturbing person, and one of the shiftiest, slimiest people you've ever seen. And it all seems like it's related to the January 6th committee to me. But the fact is, we don't really know what's going on, because we don't see a warrant yet. We don't see what's on the warrant. If they really wanted to defuse everything, whoever can show us this warrant could show us the warrant. They could show us the clear evidence, because that's my thing. The story that I was so upset about yesterday, about the evidence that Trump is destroying presidential records, and it's literally the inside of a toilet with what looks like a 3x5 index card written on it by could be anybody, and that could have been a toilet from a Waffle House anywhere in the country. It was just no evidence of anything, yet every story talked about that, and yet it was Biden's best week ever. It's because of the lack of the evidence, and they insult us by refusing to give us evidence. So if they really wanted to defuse things, and certainly I would be perfectly fine if they said, here's all the evidence, here's the warrant, the reason why, the justification. And I said, okay, well, yes, I'm all for it. But they don't do that because they don't want to defuse things, because they need the tension, they need the conflict. And I thought that this story was a good one to talk about something that I've talked about a lot, but I wanted to talk through it a little bit more in detail than I have before, and that is A to C thinking. So we have the A to B take on this story, and from the left, that is that the raid had something to do with more than just presidential records. They must have something big on him. There must be something criminal. He's finally going down, and he won't be able to run. He'll be in prison for possibly 3 years, and now we have all these right-wingers, these QAnon people that are mobilizing, and they want to tear the country apart because of this. And on the right, it's kind of the weaponized DOJ. They just don't want Trump to run. They've been taking all these efforts through the Jan 6 committee for him not to run. And not to say that stuff is not accurate. It is accurate, but the A to B aspect of it is that the way the media controls the narrative on this stuff is they get out there and they put those instant associations in our minds. And what that does is it frames the argument, it gets people fighting, and then it blocks people, or it makes it harder for people to then think around those initial associations, because it takes cognitive effort. So initially, we don't even have to think, because we just get it, we consume it unconsciously because they repeat it ad nauseum. So to think around it, we have to then do that cognitive A to C effort. And the way that I describe this, I'll just describe it the way I did an improv, because it's the best way for me to describe it. I like to relate things to improv. I think it's actually a very beneficial skill, other than the fact that it doesn't make any money, except for very, very few people. On whose line is it anyway? But it's a simple creative exercise, A to C is. And it can be useful in many contexts. I encourage everyone to use it, whatever they're doing. It can be helpful to get your brain's creative juices going. It can be helpful for innovating new ideas in business. And in the context of news, as I said, it can be helpful for seeing around this initial framing of stories that the right and left trying to control our minds with, essentially. And my first experience was, or at least using it intentionally anyway. We all do it from time to time when we're thinking creatively, but the intentional use of it was improvisational comedy. So word association exercise to get your brain going or to think about suggestions from the audience in a different way. And the idea of just a basic word association exercise is, you do the A to B exercise. And if I'm doing an A to B warm up with my scene partner or whoever, you can do it by yourself too. Then where'd my notes gear go? Okay. All right. So if I were to say ball or my scene partner were to say ball, I might respond with bat or glove, because the idea is that they say the word and you respond instantly without filtering yourself, without judging yourself. So they say ball, I might say bat, or I might say glove. That's like the more basic surface level associations that not everybody, but a large majority of people would have. And in improv, you don't want to go with that instant surface level thing, because that's the same thing the audience is thinking. And if you do that, then you're not really doing anything that they can't do. Of course, you can make good scenes out of that. Not to say that you can't. But when you interpret it A to C, then that makes them go, oh, wow, yeah, I see that, but I didn't think of that because I was initially thinking of that first association. And you can see how the news works in that similar way with that initial framing is we hear Trump Mar-a-Lago, and on the left, oh my gosh, there must be something more finally. On the right, it's they're weaponizing the FBI. They just don't want them to run. And those things could both be true. Again, not to say that they're not. But when it comes to A to C, it's an exercise to help you get quicker and quicker at going around that initial surface level association. Because our brains are like computers, man. We're pattern making machines. And the more we hear something, the more something is associated in popular culture and in the media and on our screens and from our friends and everything, the more unconscious that reaction, that association becomes. Like I said, you need that cognitive effort to get around that. So that's where A to C comes in. The A to C exercise, very similar to A to B, except I or my scene partner says the word, and then I might have the A to B reaction in my mind, but what I'm supposed to say out loud is the A to C. And the C can be an instant association that you have to the B word. So if my partner says to me, if they say ball, then I might in my head go bat. But instead of saying bat out loud, I then in my head associate bat, cave. So they say bat, or they say ball, I say cave. And, that's not a wild, creative thing, but that is not what most people would go with. So I might start a scene in an improv exercise or improv scene. If somebody yelled out bat as a suggestion, one word suggestion, some people might go out and just, throw a baseball. I might come out as Batman, or I might be in the middle of the bat cave or something like that. It's a different way. It just gives that alternative way to interpret the thing that most people would interpret a different way. If it were a glove, if someone were to say ball, in my head I go glove, I might say murder. So ball, murder. Okay, glove, fingerprints, murder. So you go down that line of associations. And there's something in social science called functional fixedness, where they did all these social science studies where they found that once people are given what a function is of an item, then it becomes significantly harder for them to come up with other ways that this item can function than it would have been had they not been told what the initial function is. And this, to me, is just so relevant to the news. We are told what the initial functions or what the initial interpretations of these stories are, and then we're filled up with tribalism and filled up with emotions that it becomes, we don't even have time almost, because we're overwhelmed with information, to stop and say, wait a minute, what's the A to C interpretation of this stuff? And I think that's something that helps me when it comes to analyzing the news, when I find myself falling into the trap of the right and left. And for this story, I think we can try to go A to C a little bit here. Honestly, I don't know if I've done a good job of going A to C a little bit here. I want to see what you think, Cam, but my initial thoughts on this were, there's the obvious thing where, yeah, they appear to be weaponizing it. They don't want Trump to run, but then I'm like, that's what everybody's saying, so there must be something more to it. And when we think about how they use the Solinsky tactics, they all do, the action is in the reaction. They might appear to be reactive. Both sides might be, but they're not. They're active, and they're trying to get a reaction from the opposition that helps them get what they want. So right. that propaganda tactic is that they work backwards. Most of us, we're thinking reactively from the news, but these people, they train them in these CIA agent manuals to work backwards. What's the goal you want, and how can you best get it by provoking the other side into doing an action that can then further your goal? And it's like false flag, basically. Yeah. is a simple way to think about it. But in this story here, so if the goal, we have the stated goals, right? of the Jan 6 committee, which is to create a historical record, a BS record, to show that Trump, did all whatever on January 6th. And then also to show that Trump is still a threat to democracy, not a past threat. He is still a threat. A domestic terror threat is the way that they're trying to frame it. And so now, what's the best way to get that done? Well, it's to cause an actual insurrection. Because they're doing it with this January 6th stuff, and it's not doing it. It's just not working for people. And it wasn't real, what they're saying. But if they can actually trigger a real insurrection, then that would actually help them get with it. Nothing would be better for the Democrats, for Biden, for the global agenda, for the Davos agenda, than a real violent insurrection by people who support Trump. And if you're working backwards, how can you cause that? Well, a way it might be to cause that is to do something that prevents Trump from running again. And to do it in a way that's so outrageous that it just pisses off Trump supporters to say, oh my gosh, everything Trump said is right. They're not going to let our guy run again. They don't even show us evidence that he's going to run again. We have to do something to take our country back. We have to literally fight against these people, which would give them exactly what they want. So thinking A to C here, it's not just about stopping Trump from running again. It's about causing his supporters to actually give them the insurrection they've been dreaming of for so long. And I think we could even go further with that, A to D, A to E, whatever. But that's one interpretation that I have. Another interpretation that I had of this, it comes from the other side. It comes from the Trump side of things. Because this is a narrative warfare that we're witnessing right here. It's pretty extraordinary and fascinating to watch at times, if not a bit scary and humorous as well. But the Trump side of it is, okay, what can we do? What can we do to mobilize supporters? We need to get the election deniers, they call them election deniers, and the other Republicans on the same side here to support Trump. Well, a great way to do that is to make Trump look like he's being persecuted by the corrupt media and by the corrupt Department of Defense and FBI and all that. And for me, if I'm strategizing with these guys, I'm saying, what if we baited the FBI into thinking that we had evidence, so much to the point we send a whistleblower in there to make them think they're going to come in and get stuff, and then they find nothing, showing how actual corrupt they actually are, and then everybody's like, Trump was right, I'm on Trump's side again. I think we're seeing high level, I hate to do the 4D chess, but I think this stuff goes much deeper. Mm-hmm. I think we're seeing some pretty intense political warfare going on. That was a ramble. What are your thoughts, Cam?
Well, I think that one of the things I would want to bring out in this A to C thinking, excuse me, is timing. Because, yep, you know, the January 6th stuff is going on right now, so it plays well with that. But it also plays well against this new Alex Jones verdict, which came out, what, yesterday, the day before, or something like that, of, you know, essentially a $50 million punishment for, quote-unquote, defamation, right? So the defamation in question is apparently that he said that the parents of this kid didn't really have their kid die, but that it was an attempt to, you know, get rid of guns, and they were just actors or whatever. But how do you defamation? Don't you have to tie that to loss of income?
There has to be damages.
Yeah. Right. So, but I mean, the first one was like $4.1 million in emotional damages, which is like, it's just a strange idea.
What was they based that number on? They said what they based it on, like $1 for each person who believed the lie. And then they tried to connect the damages to the threats that they felt. It's a stretch. The whole thing is a stretch. And from my understanding of it, he's not really putting up a defense.
Well, here's the thing. I think, you know, you look at what's going on with Trump, and this happening at the same time with Alex Jones, is they're taking out a couple of different things at once. But I think that they in my opinion, I definitely think they set up, because I think, if I'm being honest, I like Alex Jones. He's right about a lot of things. I think he may be a stooge for the deep state, but doesn't realize it. Like, he gets this information, he's really passionate about it, he shares it, but he is used and given legitimate information to make it so that no one believes him or something like that, right?
I think at that level, you are always going to be a target of being co-opted, regardless of whether you're on board with something or not.
Right. And so I think you see this happening the same time as the Trump thing with the breaking into Mar-a-Lago. They've got him on damages of defamation. How on earth Did the husband and wife, the mother and father of this child, lose their jobs and lose their ability to make money based off of what this person said? Or is it literally like everyone except for people who really believe Alex Jones, which are a very small amount of people generally, like, did they work for them? Like, how did they hurt? How did he hurt them outside of words? So you've got this this thing against the free speech. This is a major free speech blow, period.
I played a clip yesterday. If I can find it, I'll play it for you. But where they had these guys on CNN where they were talking about, what is this going to set? What precedent is this going to set for other conspiracy theorists and basically silencing them and shutting them up? Kind of like when he got kicked off the podcast apps, our website got taken down shortly thereafter. We're like, you might not like Alex Jones, but you shouldn't like what's happening to him because it affects people who don't. He'll be fine. He's got money to build his own network and stuff. Not everybody else does.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. This is – so Malice and what's his name? Curtis Yarvin, Mencius Moldbug talk about the cathedral. And it's this idea that the academia – the government and the press collude together, and that's how they work to kind of take things over. And so in this moment, what you have is Trump, who in some sense shows the political side of things, the governmental side of things, and then you have the Alex Jones, who is the alternative media side of things. And I'm just wondering, is there some lurking lawsuit against a school that isn't a public university hanging out there? You know, they're trying to break down these private universities. Aspects.
Yeah, you're saying they target the private. Yeah, I would expect that they would. Yeah,
I wonder when we're going to see that. But this on NBC News, I read a story about this verdict, and they were so clear with what they wanted in this piece. It was incredible. They said, this is not only a large blow to Jones, who has already filed for bankruptcy, but to other conspiracy theory fomenters who fill their audiences' heads with stories of the deep state, a stolen election, and a child sex ring in the basement of a pizza restaurant.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what they associate all of it with. They try to do that, and they get these sound bites that, like I said, Alex Jones doesn't appear to be defending himself. I'm sure he's going to appeal it. And like you mentioned, you have to actually show damages, and they have this ruling. And I honestly can't imagine that he pays a dollar of any of that to anyone. It just seems like a threat tactic and a public relations stunt that they're doing to try and get people to self-police and try and get platforms and stuff to do their dirty work for them. But you're right. That's the same thing CNN said. I'm trying to see if I can't pull just audio clips in here. They have to be video, and these are only audio. But one of the clips, they said they brought on these two guys who have been analyzing Alex Jones for 5 years. They're a comedy podcast, and they were like the two biggest idiots you've ever heard on any television show. And one of them said, Brian Stelter. Yeah, no, it wasn't us. We're like the next biggest idiots after that. But they made Stelter look like, you know, Stelter should have these guys on every week because they make him look a lot better than he usually does. And he was like, well, so do you think this will work? Do you think this will work in silencing other conspiracy theorists? And the answer from these guys was, well, yeah, see, conspiracies don't come from the desire to spread lies or whatever. They come from the desire for racism. That was their answer. Conspiracies come from the desire for racism. In fact, I think somebody even commented that on the video yesterday. I was like, yeah, I know. That's exactly what this guy said. Conspiracies are a product of wanting racism to exist. I mean, conspiracies are real. Like, there's literal laws about conspiracy because they're real things. And you have this idiot who was on here saying, no, conspiracies, that's because people want bigotry, they want Nazism, they want racism. And that sounds like what MSNBC was doing, too.
Well, yeah, but that's the thing. I think what we're seeing here is, I think there's a tactic to kind of silence people. There's a tactic to have it so that Trump can't take office. There are all of these different things, and they want people brought up. They either want them to self-censor or make themselves to actually be domestic terrorists so they can put them away and don't have to worry about them anymore.
They're trying to bait people so hard. Or, like, so it's all going to depend on the outcome, you know? So if Trump is actually not allowed to run because they find something, if they present legitimate evidence of wrongdoing here, then fine. I am all for evidence. That's all I want is evidence of any. I haven't seen evidence of something in, I feel like, years. It's like the like if a journalist walks into any of these networks and says, I have proof. I have the actual damning proof, the film of somebody being shot in the head. They go, no, no, no. Get your evidence out of our newsroom.
Please.
Because they don't want it. They want to create this standard where people just accept blatant sensation. Alex Jones had sex with a unicorn. Okay, I mean, it's like they want people to just accept the most ridiculous things. It's a brainwashing tactic. It really is. It's right. How dare you ask us, the elites, for evidence? And right. they
like
do
the girl with the 10-year-old girl that was raped and needed an abortion. How dare you ask us for evidence?
What a ridiculous! They have all these stories that are lies, and then they get one that's like that was such clear bait to me. That whole story was such clear bait to me. But so good.
Let me. I was just gonna say with this Alex Jones thing. I said that I think he is. I don't think he necessarily realizes that he's a plant, but I think that he is, and I think that they decided finally to screw him by giving him the lawyers that he's gotten.
So I saw a headline. I don't know if it's true. That is like Alex Jones accidentally. He sent pictures of his wife naked to Roger Stone. And they accidentally sent those messages to the other lawyers. Is that any truth to that story?
Yeah, allegedly. That's what they say. I read that same article. He apparently sent a nude picture of his, I guess now ex-wife, to Roger Stone. But that was another point. It's
Roger Stone likes guys though. So,
oh, does he?
He was like in a drag queen. That's the interesting thing. They hate Roger Stone, but Roger Stone has been like a drag queen. I think like two decades. But there was a scandal about him like in the 90s.
Is, you know, how does he get these lawyers? Because it's like he borrowed Amber Heard's lawyers or something. Like these people, they sent text messages, all of the text messages to the not the defense. What is it? What's the word? My brain's
prosecution.
Farting. Yeah, the prosecution or whatever. And the prosecution allegedly said, hey, I don't think you meant to send these to us. Are these confidential or not? And then Alex Jones's attorneys never answered. So like if they had said it was privileged, they never would have seen this.
Yeah, I thought that was a bit suspicious as well. I don't know his relationship with these lawyers, but anybody can be gotten to, I guess. And I just think about, you know, I don't know the truth of the story of what he sent to Roger Stone.
I don't care.
No idea, but I do know that I have had an interaction before where I saw somebody that I hadn't seen in years. And the first thing, this is somebody who kind of a creepy person, I'm be honest with you. The first thing he did was he goes, oh, hey, how you doing? He pulls up his phone because I'd never known him to have a girlfriend before. And I'm like, what's up, dude? And it's been like 5 years since I seen him. And he just pulls up a naked picture of his girlfriend on his phone. I'm like, and she was there. Like, she had introduced me to her. And I'm just like, what are you doing? What is wrong with you? I don't understand that.
Well,
it's not. Yeah, I don't understand that whole culture.
I think when you're looking at this situation, the fact that his lawyers sent this to the plaintiffs and then didn't say, hey, this is confidential, is just ludicrous. It for me, that tells me that's suspicious. And you know who Alex Jones is. And so he's sitting on the stand with his incontrovertible proof that he said something about Sandy Hook. Now, I don't know. I didn't hear what he said, but that he had said he hadn't said anything. And then suddenly they searched Sandy Hook and found it. And so I think he's sitting in that chair going, crap, they've got me. They finally got me, and that's why he's not really fighting in that moment.
So we have Catherine here in the chat says that how is he not protesting that his attorney just threw the case?
Right. And sorry.
That's a great point. If your attorney is just really there, I don't know what the exact laws on it, but you can have a situation where it's just been so your attorney's been so bad that they can even try and throw a case out. I looked at it kind of like the way that I saw what's the other guy's name? Steve Bannon. War Room with God on the Lord's Day. Like the guy, everything he says, he could be ordering groceries on the phone and be like, I need lettuce because we have to save democracy. Everything he says is about war and saving democracy. He didn't put up a fight because he's going to appeal it. And also, I mentioned this before, It's in Solinsky's book, it's in Hitler's book. So we get both the left and the right here, the Antifa and the Nazis. They both agree that getting arrested and being persecuted is a good thing. So Alex Jones, I don't know what his financial situation's like. He's probably doing okay. I don't agree with them trying to demonize conspiracy theorists at all. I don't know what his role is on it. I know just the idea of demonizing it is bad, but these guys might not be putting up a fight just because it is better for them to be the victim. Stacey Abrams' entire career has been built on her being a victim. I mean, a lot of these people, this is how they gain their political stardom. It's how they gain fundraising. Both sides of this Trump thing, are fundraising off of this. Of course, less like Trump is fundraising off of having Mar-a-Lago beer. Of course, he's fundraising off of it. Why, are you kidding me? Why would we be stupid not to? Hillary Clinton. Did you see the Hillary Clinton thing going around? Hillary Clinton tweeted out earlier today a hat that she's selling, and I can't remember the exact phrasing of it. It's on Twitter, but it was just like, you can buy our What About the Emails hats for like $39.99 or $29.99, and she's tweeting this out. I mean, this is a literal criminal. He's just like, which honestly, I got to hand it to her. She is a criminal and it's very sadistic and it's like crazy, but it's kind of funny that she's literally selling What About the Email hats a few hours after it's announced that Trump gets raided. So these people, they're both conning all of us. All sides are conning the public is I think what it boils down to. And I don't know exactly what the truth is here. I think if Trump actually doesn't run, which there's no way Trump doesn't run, because they need him to run. They need him to run for people to care. And so I think that if they actually blocked him from running, then I would start to be like, okay, maybe Trump is a little more legitimate than I considered. But it's unfortunate that it gets to that he would actually have to be prevented from running and almost be on the precipice of going to jail. But these people are all charlatans to me. It's just
absolutely. Well, and one of the things, so can I give you the silver lining?
Yeah, please.
So in my opinion, like, I made that cathedral thing and I was like, okay, so let me look at what's going on at private universities. And I'm not trying to do confirmation bias. This may have nothing to do with it whatsoever. But I just thought, hey, what is the private Christian university that Trump is most known for going to? What is a place that would be tied to Trump no matter what? Liberty University. He didn't go to Liberty, but he spoke there. And the head guy there loved him.
Right?
Right. But right now, they are also going through a lawsuit about Title IX and not necessarily pushing rape cases or sexual assault cases to the proper authorities, which they may or may not have done that. All I'm saying is you see that happening, and all of them are Jane Doe's. None of them have said their names. And you see the fact that in one fell swoop at this moment, right now, they're taking on the same kind of effects of the cathedral, or the heads of the cathedral, which are government, Trump, media, Alex Jones, and the academia, Liberty University. I'm not saying this is tied together, but what I am saying is that if it is, or even just the first two were tied together, then you have a really beautiful sign that says they are terrified and they know what works and they know what they've done and they're trying to take out the alternative. And that means that regardless of what's going on, the narrative is failing for them. And so now they're trying to do it with the state sword.
I would agree with that they are trying so very hard. This is something I was talking about yesterday. They are trying so, so hard to get people to believe them. To they're trying all these roundabout ways to get people to buy into their narrative, and it's just not working. And I played the clips a while back. I should probably kind of isolate those clips and play them every now and then of them at Davos a couple of months ago admitting, and I played the clip for you.
Yeah.
They don't like us. The elites have grown more and more united while the publics of the world have grown to distrust them more. Therefore, we have to put on an effort to build trust. And we see these trust building efforts. We see, I said yesterday, I think Hunter Biden is why Biden is going to be out after the midterms. And I think the media is going to claim a victory for exposing Hunter Biden after they claimed he was Russian disinformation. How soon people will forget, or they'll find some sort of weird rationalization about it. But I think that you're right. I don't think they would have to do all these efforts if they weren't a bit worried. They're more than a bit worried, actually. And I have some clips that I want to get your opinion on that speaks to this. That said, this stuff is all connected, man. It's crazy. This disinformation, narrative war. What we're seeing is narrative warfare. So we have all these different stories. It might be seem sporadic or whatever, but they all fit right in to the narrative on one side or I hate saying one side or the other because there's more sides, but the predominant sides that they present to us anyway. And that's really when you start to think about it in that way. Why is this story being told? How does it serve the narrative they're telling us? And you will always be like, there it is. There it is. It's so few and far between that you can actually identify a story that just seems to be being reported to us for, hey, here's a cool story about a dog and a kid. Here's a cool story about a dog and a kid. The dog saved the kid from traffic and then climate change. It's everything has some sort of weird twist to it.
Can I want to respond to Denver Attaway in the Rockfin chat, who said maybe Alex Jones is a willing straw man or an unwilling straw man guided by narcissism, which is worse for us. And I will say, perhaps, in my opinion, I don't know what you think, but for me, it's a willing straw man. That's worse for us because it means they know how to crack the code to get a lot of people on their side with a fake persona.
Yeah, I would agree with that, that if they're willing, it's worse, because if they're unwilling and they can be shown that there's some strings being pulled, then I think that they might step back on that ego. If you, that book I recommend, I'm looking over at it like you guys can see it, but Getting Us Into War, one of the things that these British propagandists who they conducted this major operation, I've talked about this a lot on the show, I won't do the whole spiel again, but Sir Gilbert Parker, the agent, the propaganda agent that led the operation to get America into World War One, was sent over here. They sent all these literary agents over here that these well-known academics, these well-known politicians and celebrities, they adored them. And they knew that if they sent them over, they could whisper in their ear and they would not question them. They talk about in their correspondence between Lord Northcliffe, who was the head of the Wellington House Propaganda Bureau, the World War One British propaganda agency, and Sir Gilbert Parker was his agent. They talked about how gullible and stupid these academics were and how it was because of their ego, how their ego blinded them to the reality. They felt they could never be fooled. Nobody could ever get one by them, and therefore they never questioned any of the stuff that they took in. And I think there's definitely something to that, but that also I agree with you, Cam, in that I would much rather it be somebody who's being bamboozled than somebody who believes they could not, somebody who is in on it. Like, we can all be bamboozled, man. We're all going to be got sometime. There's no doubt about it. Like, the second you think you can't be got is the second you're most vulnerable to being got.
Well, I mean, and you know, I think that it doesn't say as much if Jones is unwilling or unknowingly doing this, because we wouldn't be caught up in that. Because I will not believe anyone who randomly comes up to me or anyone I know that might be tied to the state in any way. I wouldn't be talking to Roger Stone. Are you kidding me? So it's good that it would be much better if it was willing. I mean, much worse if it was willing. Because if it was unwilling, that just means that he had a lapse of judgment, did something stupid, listened to the wrong people, but he was actually trying to find the truth and share it with people.
And as human, we've all been unwilling propagandists for something in our lives. There's no
absolutely
doubt about it. There's absolutely
I was,
no doubt about it.
I don't know if you remember this, right after the Uvalde shooting, I read that first report that the police gave about the situation, and I was like, you know, maybe the police didn't do so bad a job this time. I was kind of nicer to the police than I ever wanted to be, but I was like looking for something that was good in this horrible situation. And then the next day I had to go, oh, never mind. I was wrong. I'll never do that again.
Right. And I remember you were very eager to make that statement too, which is that to me, that's a testament there. Cause a lot of people won't admit, you know, say when they come out and say something, and you're like, wait a minute, I had this wrong. And to me, that is a credit to your credibility, to credit twice in a sentence there I used. we have David Hopkins here says, what if you want to get got, LOS? Sometimes you want to get got, I guess. I don't know. But so something you said earlier, it did remind me of what is the strategy doesn't come to mind, but there's actually a Wikipedia on this, and there are the other strategies, and it's like a 1999 CIA psychological operations manual And it talks about the strategies for getting people to be double agents, getting people to be spies. And it's never like, hey, want to come be a spy? It, like, we see the CIA ads now where it's like, I'm a black woman with like a club foot and a cliff, whatever. And but I knew I could do that's like the ads now. It's just a bunch of nonsense. How they really get their spies is they try and find people that have problems with money, who are in a lot of debt, and they try and find people who can be compromised sexually. They try and find people who ego. Yes. And that's the thing that made me think of it is the ego thing. It, like reading their description, I think MICE might be what it's called. That's one of the techniques, one of the acronyms that they use, MICE. And there's a couple others as well, but it's interesting to read about the way that they think about it. You know, the way that they say, okay, I'm looking for somebody to be either a willing or unwilling operative of our messaging to do our bidding for us. Who are the types of people that I'm looking for? And you have the Communist Bolsheviks. There's a book called The Organizational Weapon. And it's written in like 1954. It's about the communist organizational tactics. And it's another one of those things that's interesting to read because it's like, I know the people writing this also use these tactics. But the way that they're like, okay, here's how you get someone to be an activist. You find people who are missing something in their lives. You find
identity,
people who,
primarily.
Yeah, exactly. I you nailed it.
Yeah, well, and this just makes me, what you're talking about makes me think of the different marks that they've had. The ATF especially has had over the last, you know, 20, 30 years. God, 30 years. Because you have, take a look at Randy Weaver, who lived in, he was a, I think they called themselves like Christian separatists or something like that. I'm not exactly sure. But they wanted to separate from everyone and just be kind of white people separate from other races, separate from other ideologies or whatever.
Say that.
But so he was holed up with his family, and I think he went to one of the local like Aryan Nation meetings one time, and they were like, nah, we're not going to do this. We want to be separate from these people too. And then the ATF agent came and was like, hey, I want to buy a gun from you. And he's like, I mean, I don't really sell guns, so no. He's like, I really want to buy a shotgun from you. He's like, no. And so this ATF agent pushed and pushed and pushed because he knew who this type of guy was and he knew what he could push to get to.
The psychological profile. Totally.
Right. And so when you see Randy Weaver and what he got in trouble for was selling sawed off shotguns to this man. I cannot remember the agent's name off the top of my head. I think he was like Findlay or something. But when the ATF agent got them from him, they were not sawn off. And then the ATF agent walked over to the guns and said, hey, saw them off here. It was a quarter inch shorter than what was legal. It wasn't 7 inches. It wasn't 2 inches.
They turned around and arrested them right after they did it. Yeah. There was one of these stories of these FBI informants where it was just like, nine guys and like the dumbest person on the planet, you know, and they're like, hey, can you believe that person called you a white nationalist? Can you believe that woman rejected you? Can you, hey, I made this bomb for you. Here's the bomb for you. Like literally you read in the court documents that the bomb was made at the CIA headquarters in Langley. And then the FBI took the bomb after suggesting to the target, the person they were, you know, watching, that it was literally the FBI's idea that he go bomb something. And then one of their informants said, hey, we'll make the bomb for you and bring it to you. And then the CIA makes the bomb. They give it to the FBI. They go over and say, here's the bomb. And then when they give them the bomb, they say, turn around, FBI. I mean, it's unbelievable. The most unbelievable examples of entrapment, that if you read court cases about entrapment, and I don't know what the legal precedent is on entrapment. It's legal precedents can be, if you have a good lawyer, and I look, when I was in law school, not saying this to brag, but I won an award for advocacy, for legal advocacy brief. And the reason I won is because I was told what my objective was for the brief. Here's what you're to defend. And I said, what? So I'm supposed to be the person who, I can't remember, I was like the defense lawyer of some guy who committed some murder. And so I looked at all of it, and I looked at all of the ways that I knew I would lose. And I said, okay, I'm not going to do any of those ways. So what I'm going to search for is some loophole. And so I searched for all this statutory law. I was in school in Florida, and I found some obscure law. And I said, based on this obscure law, like, this person can't be prosecuted. It was something like that. And I won an award, and we had to present our briefs to judges in Florida, to actual judges in Florida. It's really fucking nerve-wracking. Excuse me. It's really nerve-wracking to do that.
Bad
the first time. Yes, the first time you do that. But, like, the reason that I got credit that I did a good job on that is because I was able to connect this law that no one had ever connected to this case. And I was able to do it in a logical way. And I was able to show here's why it's parallel and why it's relevant. And I feel like this is what they do this stuff. They have these agents to manipulate these people who just aren't very smart and who didn't have their dad was in their life or something, or their mom or whatever. And they're just missing something. And they amplify the problems these people have instead of actually helping everybody. Like, I don't think anybody's a lost cause. Like, I that's one thing I've always believed in my life. No one is an effing lost cause, no matter like how far off they are. If people can be talked to and like be cool, it's like people are reasonable. We're all human. We're all have flaws, but they try and amplify the flaws so they can have these scapegoats, and it pisses me off. FBI foils, FBI terrorplots. That's great.
But yeah,
on screen right now, Cam put an image of a woman looking shocked. It says FBI foils, FBI terrorplot. It's great. I love that.
But no, and so the reason I went to Ruby Ridge because I know more details about that.
You did a great thing on Ruby Ridge, by the way. You did like a great podcast outlining what happened on Ruby Ridge. Is that right?
Yeah, I love that. That was back when I was Make Liberty Great Again, but it's episode 35 and it's on everything. But what I wanted to say, though, is what you made me think of initially was the Gretchen Whitmer situation.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
This is what they do. And so Alex Jones is ripe for the picking. I mean, if you hear some of the stories that he talks about getting into Bohemian Grove and these different things, there's just no way those people weren't connected. And I, like, if you look at this man and if you look
it's
at the
like
way
they were driving the bus, they were driving the bus. They had the idea and it's just unbelievable. It's funny. Right. It'd be like a comedy show almost.
Well, and that's the thing is like but if you watch Alex Jones and if you spend any time watching him outside of his shtick, and if you see him talking honestly, openly on weed, on alcohol, that man, I don't think he knows it. I genuinely, like, based on how he acts, I do not think he realizes that the deep state's using him.
Yeah, I it's tough to tell for me, honestly. I think that he's aware that there are people, because he has such influence. And that's the thing about anybody with such influence. So I look at Joe Rogan sometimes, and Joe Rogan, I did a show.
Oh, he's a
with
plant.
Before Joe Rogan was, I mean, Joe Rogan was famous at the time, but he wasn't famous like he is now.
Fear
I did
factor.
A show with him like 13 years ago, and I don't think it was true, but people were like, he's hooking up with a girl in the green room. I'm like, I'm not going in the green room to check that out. I have no idea. Maybe he was. I have no idea. But he was like, he was just a cool guy doing comedy, and he seems like a cool guy now that is not dumb. And I don't think Alex Jones is dumb either. So I think they both, and anybody with that level of influence is going to recognize they are a target for co-option. But that doesn't, here's the thing. It's like, you can't prevent it almost. That's why it really is. They call it information war and narrative warfare and stuff like that. But they are very good at like trying to get people close to you or turning people. I know that Alex Jones had a few people who worked for him who they turned against him. I don't know what they promised him. Some people give in to threats easier than others when put on the spot or when certain, like I said, the rice techniques or the mice techniques from the CIA earlier. So I think that Alex Jones is probably definitely aware that he's targeted.
Well,
I don't know if, yeah, I'm not saying
he's
Alex Jones is funny
blameless.
And he gives out good information, but also he's one of the, I think everybody should be questioned. Like, even if you love the person, I think that because everyone gets stuff wrong, we're all human. We should just assume that and question all of it. And I think Alex Jones is the same with that, whether he's legit or willing.
Well, yeah. And I'm not saying he's faultless, but what I'm saying is I think he has drank his own Kool-Aid. Maybe. And I do think that there's a level of narcissism to it, but I do think that if you look at that, I mean, for God's sake, he even told Joe Rogan that he was retarded. So I'm just going to believe him.
That is funny. He is entertaining for sure. And that's how you know these guys I played on CNN. I wish I had the video versions of this, but I don't. But one of the things the guy said was, Stelter said, so do you find it hard to watch Alex Jones on a regular basis? So what I do a lot of is I watch these Council on Foreign Relations and CFR panel discussions because they're insanely boring and nobody watches them. And they say really like, holy smokes, that's damning stuff. And then Biden says verbatim what they say like 3 weeks later. Yep. And so I watch that and I try and provide more context than necessary. Like I hate when clips are cut off in the middle. I know you can't play 2 hours or 3 hours or 8 hours of a panel discussion. So I try and provide as much context as possible without overwhelming. But like, I understand. It's just boring to watch. That's why I do it. I'm like, I think there's value in it because there's value in understanding what they're saying. But also, it's really tedious and people have real lives to live. And yeah. so they were talking to this guy as though Alex Jones was like that. They're like, so is it hard to watch Alex Jones all the time? And the guy who talked like this in the clip to Brian Stelter, he said, yes, it's very hard to watch him. He's very boring. And I have to watch him. The reason I watch him is because nobody else watches him. And I need to tell everybody what he's saying. I'm going, this guy's so full of it. He look, Alex Jones is anything but boring, okay? He might be willing or unwilling, whatever, but he's definitely not boring. Just like Trump, even Biden is not boring when they let him come out and say idiotic, crazy old man stuff. But the guy was pretending that nobody watches it as a way to discourage his audience or the audience watching to go and look at it. Well, and then so, Brian Stelter said this. Brian Stelter goes, I've only consumed him through clips. I'm like, wow, you've reported as though you're an expert on him, and you just admitted that you've only consumed him through clips. It's one thing to watch Brian Stelter and only take the clips in as an audience member, but to be the journalist and to only consume someone through clips, that means he's been stovepiped in, you know, more ways than one, I'm sure. But information-wise here, he's been stovepiped, and he doesn't actually know what the full context of what Jones has said is. And that's... You know, I don't know.
Well, I mean, that's today. No, you're good. I'm enjoying this. what were you just saying though? Because I had a thought and
about Alex Jones and stovepiping information to Stelter about how people. The guy tried to say Alex Jones was not entertaining and he it's tedious for him to watch it hours and hours and he pulls clips to try and show it. And I was talking about the CFR and how boring it all is.
The best thing I ever saw, and I was alerted to this. By a friend of mine. And it was a video clip of Alex Jones saying before anything else happened, telling people exactly what he was about to say, how he was going to say it, and how the media would respond. And then he said something, he went into his character, he did all this stuff, and then he went past it and he said, watch, someone's going to tell someone that I said this, they're going to clip this one specific part, and they're going to put it out and act like that's what I really said without giving you the information that comes before. And it's like...
Right, pre-bunk, it's like a pre-bunk.
Yeah, and it's like, and oh, okay, that's cool.
And two, with these people... Monica used to say this a lot. There is information in limited hangouts. Even if people are willing, they're still giving information. It's all about that trust that they want to get from us. And I hate to be cynical with it. I am a trusting person, but when it comes to the media, I am not. I assume that they're trying to manipulate, and they are. And I think that's a good place to go to, especially when they're trying very, very hard to trigger our emotions and short circuit our ability to question them. And I have some clips of a propagandist saying perfectly about critical thinking, how we need to really question our critical thinking, that I am going to play in the XR because we've run out of time here. I think your mind's going to be blown by this clip, to be honest with you, Cam.
I have one thing that I wanted to show you real quick.
Yeah, let's see it.
Actually, there are a couple things I could mention in the XR that are not at all appropriate whatsoever for this part of the show. But I did make a meme while we were talking there, because that's who I am. You know what I mean?
You're a good memer, dude. Well, let's see. Let's see one of them for the DMB. We'll hit the rest in the XR.
I only have one meme, so that it'll be the only meme. But I have other things to talk about. That. Let me give you one more thing while I'm trying to get this to pull up, because this is ignoring my mouse clicks. So there was a man in Ohio, who I didn't get his, I don't have his name off the top of my head. Let me see if I can find it. Richard Steinle, who is 77 years old. Okay. Richard used to work for the post office. And, one of the things that he did was over the past couple of years, at least back to 2021, he's in Ohio and he hates his politicians. And so he has been filling envelopes with poop and sending it to all of these different people. And so this man, this old man, sent, what was that guy's name? What was the, Jim Jordan? He sent him and 25 other senators a envelope with dung in it, poop, human poop, most likely, but they don't know. They haven't tested it yet. And I just want to say, hero.
Yeah, some people knit, others they do what this man did. Can you imagine if that was your grandfather? If you like walked in on him, like, what are you doing?
taking a dumper.
What
in
are
the...
you doing in that envelope, grandfather? On the screen right now, Cam has put Gretchen Whitmore's would-be assassins, and it's a bunch of Spider-Men pointing at each other, saying, and they all say, "Fed, fed, fed." You're right, we're all feds, and that's basically what it is. And I think we can end the free portion of the show on that. And the DMB XR, I'm going to play those clips for you of really... I only cut a couple clips from this panel discussion because I'm saving a few for tomorrow, and I knew that we wouldn't have time, but... These guys, and they're from the Chatham House, which is the 115-year-old mother of the Council on Foreign Relations, the most influential think tank on the planet, where Sir, what's the guy's, another Sir, they're all Sirs, Sir Andrew Wood, the guy who was the mentor for Christopher Steele, who was the origin dossier. Of the Steele dossier. And he was his mentor. And this guy, Sir Andrew Wood from the Chatham House, met with John McCain at the Halifax conference, the security conference, to tell him, to introduce him to Steele and his dossier. So this is where the dossier came from. And these are people talking about the Ukraine war. I'm not going to play the clips about the specificities of that. I'm just going to play the clips of them talking about the disinformation because it's so relevant to everything that we're seeing in the news right now. It's like extraordinary that this guy was this open about. I love it when these psychopaths are so open about their psychopathy.
Can I ask you a question before we go into the XR?
Of course.
Okay. We bring in the studio this morning one of the gay rights activists, Mr. Should I call you Mr.? Sure. Pepe Julian Onzima. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for
good morning.
Me. Morning to you.
Why are you gay?
Who says I'm gay?
You are gay.
Is he right? I don't know.
It doesn't get old for me. It doesn't That's get old hilarious. For me. It's so hilarious. I had to bring it back at least one more time. I will call do it back. Once more because right. comedy comes in threes.
Yeah, you got
one
it
more time.
Least expect
randomly.
I wish there was a way you could hide it in the StreamYard so I didn't
for
see
real.
It. You could just put it on me. Like
Why
that.
Are you gay? Yeah. Well, I mean, technically I could, but I wouldn't get your reaction, so that would kind of blow.
That's true. All right. Well, let's continue this conversation in the XR. Thank you, Cam. Thank you. Great chat. Great stuff in the chats on YouTube and on RockFan. We're going to continue with the exclusive content on RockFan, rockfan.com/propagandareport. You can also get it through podcast at patreon.com/propagandareport if you want to get it there, audio only. Go ahead, Cam.
I was just going to say, Denver Attaway said in the chat, it's a bit more elaborate than an envelope. You can have it special gift wrapped if you want on the download to poopsenders.com. But not this man. This man, these were envelopes, and he wrote letters to these people and then put poop in the envelope. So
he's
it's a felony, and he is now, he just got out on bail or bond.
How
or
long was he in jail for?
I don't know off the top of my head. I just
mean,
wanted to clear
that
up.
Once you get to that age, you need a hobby, otherwise you'll wither away. So this guy found something he was committed to, and I can... You know, a little bit appreciate that effort. I don't know.
Absolutely.
That's the way that I would go. All right. We'll talk to you guys in the DMBXR. Have a fantastic rest of your day.